You're listening to BrandonTopTier.com podcast for June the 3rd. I am Brandon, and I am with...
Charles!
And we're going to talk about wrestling. Okay, first up, Charles, what did you think about the Elimination Chamber? I know we ran it down earlier about the Elimination Chamber on our last podcast, but how was the atmosphere at the Elimination Chamber in your eyes? How did the outcome perceive to you? How did you like it altogether? Did you feel that it was a good pay-per-view that led in to the Money in the Bank, which is coming up, I think, June the 14th on the WWE Network again. And I believe subscribers are going to be free. But anyways, how did you feel that the Elimination Chamber tied up overall and is leading us into the Money in the Bank?
I thought it was a good pay-per-view. I was a little disappointed about the tag team match in the chamber that I had been looking forward to, just because they actually let all three members of New Day into the chamber, and I was looking forward to Xavier Woods being outside and having to find a way in illegally, because, as I've mentioned before, I love the fact that New Day cheats. There was no way for them to cheat in this match. Yeah, because everything's legal in the chamber. So what I had heard originally is that Woods was going to be outside the chamber and that Kofi Kingston and Big E would be in the pod. But that did not happen. Instead, we got all three members in the chamber. It was still a good match. I felt that it could have gone on a bit longer. I felt the same way about the Intercontinental title match, which I honestly... That felt like a bit of a letdown to me. Maybe it's because Rusev wasn't involved in it like he was supposed to be, but of course you can't do anything about a broken foot. Overall, though, good pay-per-view. The Seth Rollins-Dean Ambrose match, maybe not their best match, but still very, very good. And the ending, I liked the fact that, okay, we get all the time these screwjobbed endings from WWE, which this was another one. Yes, Rollins was disqualified, and he kept the title because of that, even though he lost, because the title can't change hands on a disqualification. Someone should tell Dean Ambrose. However, the way that they made this happen, which you didn't actually see it as a disqualification while it was happening, pulling the referee in front of him the way Seth Rollins did and having him get knocked out by Dean Ambrose's elbow and then having the match continue. So you didn't know there was going to be a disqualification. That was at least an interesting twist on it.
I was definitely shocked to see Dean Ambrose win the title. I thought, well, what are they going with now with Dean Ambrose going to be our WWE World Heavyweight Champion? That shocked me.
It surprised me too, and then it made more sense when they turned it around and said, nah, Seth Rollins was disqualified. Dean Ambrose really isn't the champion. Because I never felt, and I know we talked about this before too, I never felt that Dean Ambrose was going to walk away the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Neither did you.
No. I knew something was going to happen, though. I did feel that. I did feel like the authority was going to run out, say this title didn't change hands or restart the match. Because I honestly wasn't watching that part where the referee got hit, so I didn't know that there was a disqualification because of it. But it was interesting. It was an interesting way to trick the IWC community.
Oh, absolutely. Something they've done, though, now, with regards to what's coming up after the chamber, which you mentioned is Money in the Bank on the 14th of June, I think that they've overplayed their hand a little bit with what they're letting everybody know is upcoming. Okay, they've announced Brock Lesnar is coming back on June 22nd at Raw.
Right.
And absolutely, I understand the point that when Brock Lesnar's around, because he has this abbreviated schedule, it's something special.
Can't miss.
And because it's something special, can't miss, that's what Paul Heyman said on the Stone Cold podcast, Monday Night After Raw, absolute, and I agree with him, you can't miss when Brock Lesnar's going to be there. to me, telling everybody, though, this is when he's coming back. Okay, now you can't play with this at Money in the Bank the way you could have. Because, you know, you could have had Paul Heyman show up that last Monday Night Raw, right before Money in the Bank, which is, oddly enough, that's this upcoming Monday Night Raw now. Is the last Raw before Money in the Bank, because we've managed to get into an area where we have a pay-per-view every two weeks. I feel weird even saying that, but you could have had Paul Heyman out there, you know, playing with this idea. Brock Lesnar might show up at Money in the Bank, because, you know, Brock Lesnar still feels like that title was stolen from him by Seth Rollins, with the Money in the Bank briefcase, mind you, at WrestleMania. So, maybe Brock Lesnar shows up and costs Seth Rollins the title. Maybe Brock Lesnar shows up and he costs Dean Ambrose the match because he wants to be the man to defeat Seth Rollins for the title. There's so much more that I feel they could have done with that. Playing with that is whether or not Brock Lesnar is going to show up at Money in the Bank. And now they've kind of, you know, promoted themselves in such a way, okay, you've already told us when Brock Lesnar is going to be there, so we know not to look for him at Money in the Bank. That disappoints me a little bit.
Yeah, unless this is a trick.
That would be nice. Unfortunately, I don't see it happening because they have this mindset that when Brock Lesnar is going to be there, you have to tell everybody ahead of time.
Yeah, because I guess they believe that people are skipping Raws. Not going to watch every one of them.
To be honest, we've had a run of very good pay-per-views lately. I would say going all the way back to Fastlane, the pay-per-views have been very well done. The build-up on Raw to the pay-per-views, however, not spectacular.
Right.
Again, Monday night. Monday night wasn't a bad show after Elimination Chamber. There were some things I didn't understand that happened Monday night. Like, you have Dean Ambrose, who can get himself over very well on the mic. He's a good talker. Not great, but becoming better all the time, and he is very good. And you have Roman Reigns, who struggles in that area and is still struggling, and you do something silly, like have Roman Reigns come out and tell the authority what Dean Ambrose wants next, rather than having Dean Ambrose come out and promote himself. That seemed really silly to me.
Yeah, definitely.
And then, as we were talking about last time, again, the authority. 15 minutes, I timed it, 15 minutes to start that show. I don't know if we have to start emailing Triple H, tweeting him, whatever, and say, hey, we don't want to see you and your wife for 10, 15, 20 minutes to start every Raw.
And that's why NXT works so well, because that doesn't happen. They wrestle on there. What did you think of Kevin Owens' promo on John Cena at Raw? Did you see Raw?
I did see Raw. Kevin Owens' promo with John Cena was very good. Again, it just has this very believable, authentic quality to it. And it works both ways in that regard, by the way. Everything that John Cena said back to Kevin Owens after he came out had a very authentic quality to it. I mean, you can sit here and watch this and everything that's going on between those two gentlemen. And by the way, thumbs up WWE for letting Kevin Owens go over at Elimination Chamber. Yeah. I didn't think you would do it. I'm very happy to see it.
Here's the question. Is he going to do it at Money the Bank? Because if he does, John Cena era is over. for as far as a top guy, someone has replaced him.
I don't agree with that necessarily.
In a way.
I think that Kevin Owens, if he goes over at Money in the Bank, is a made man. Definitely.
He probably already is.
He is in several respects, but that cements him if he goes over Cena twice in a row.
But then you can look at Triple H, he buries people, and Kevin Owens and Triple H are big buddies.
This is true.
And that might be why he's getting such a big push. But Kevin Owens is an awesome wrestler on his, as of himself. But, you know, Kevin Cena, Ring of Honor, for anybody who wants to look that up.
Like I said, very authentic between the two of them, very real. I mean, you could see where Kevin Owens would be upset by the fact that he goes out and he wins this huge match in his WWE debut against the man, John Cena, on pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first thing his son does on the phone is ask him, is John okay? You can see where legitimately Kevin Owens is going to be like, man, this sucks. This is my kid, and he's not like, congratulations, Daddy, but is John okay?
Yeah.
And so that was believable. And then I know everybody is sick of Cena. You know, so we've seen enough. They're over it.
The adults have.
But
the women John and children
Cena is
love him.
Out there in the ring. And he's talking about never give up and what those three words mean to him and how it's not just a catchphrase. It's not just a slogan. And he looks out into the crowd and he sees that child that I'm going to say is about 8 or 9 years old. And I'm getting goosebumps right now. You can see him.
Mm-hmm.
But he looks out there and he sees the kid holding up that sign that says, I'm beating cancer. And he looks at Kevin Owens and he says, it's not just three words. That's what it's about. Never give up. And you could see if that kid was crying. His mom was crying. This is John Cena. This is what he does. So this is the guy that has filled over 500 wishes with Make-A-Wish Project. And you can say what you want about John Cena and the WWE marketing behind him and everything else. That's not a marketing ploy. You don't get a guy to go to Make-A-Wish Foundation and fill over 500 wishes just as some marketing ploy. This is John Cena taking his celebrity and giving back to people. Because he can do it that way with what he has built through his character in WWE now. And you can tell it really means something to him. And I think there was also a grain of truth when he looked at Kevin Owens and he told Kevin Owens, look, never give up are three words that define Kevin Owens, too.
Yeah, he said that'd be a hard pill to swallow.
And you looked at Kevin Owens' face when he said that, and I don't know that he knew that was coming or not, but if he knew it was coming, he deserves an Oscar because he looked legitimately upset that Cena would say that. But John Cena is absolutely right when he points that out. Kevin Owens worked up through independence like he has talked about, just working and working and working for over a decade to get a break in WWE. If that's not never give up, I don't know what is. And so everything that is going on between those two gentlemen right now is tremendous. A+.
Yeah, I look forward for their segment at Raw. I was, you know, waiting for that. Because it's something that Raw hadn't had in a long time.
There's a buzz when the two of them are out there in the ring together, too. You know, I really hope that this isn't just something that Triple H is throwing together. Because, you know, he and Kevin Owens are reportedly close backstage. Mm-hmm. I hope that
and he's
this
a big guy.
I hope that this is something that Kevin Owens and John Cena are really enjoying working together as well. Because, man, if they're not enjoying this, they're really missing the boat because they are producing some outstanding stuff right now together.
So we both agree this is a really outstanding segment.
Absolutely.
And something to definitely look forward to as the months roll on.
I want to know what's going to go on Monday night again.
Yeah.
You know, as they cut those final promos going into the rematch at Money in the Bank, because that's what Monday night will be.
And the U.S. title is not on the line.
Again.
So, people who speculate might think that you know, if the title was on the line, Owens wouldn't go over. But anyway, so let's wrap up that and let's talk about another wrestler who is reportedly signed a full-time contract with the WWE, and that is Samoa Joe. What do you think about Samoa Joe signing a full-time contract, and will he work his way up in NXT, or will he go straight to WWE? And I heard that he had a dark match before Raw began, and it's going to be on Superstars. I'm not really sure on that one yet. And so, Samoa Joe, what is his path going to be in the WWE, especially now that he had reportedly signed a full-time contract with that company?
Well, Samoa Joe is interesting because, of course, he has his name coming in, and they've let him keep his name.
At first?
So...
Well, not, you know what I mean.
There's a lot of things they could do with Samoa Joe. I'm leaning toward working his way up in NXT yet, just because that is the way they've had everybody do things so far. And as soon as you let one guy not go that direction, then you're setting a different precedent as people come in afterwards. I don't know that they want to set that precedent, so I'm thinking that you still go through NXT. However,
you don't have to be there long.
With Kevin Owens working on the main roster, and it was very clear at Unstoppable not long ago that they want Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe in the same ring. That's the match that they're looking forward to. That's the match that a lot of people have looked for years.
Have they ever?
And I don't know for sure.
Ring of Honor?
Well, they may have. I would have to look that up. They may have. People listening to this may know more than I do in that regard. I am not sure if they've met or not. I know that there's a lot of people that have talked about them meeting in the past. I don't know that it has happened, but certainly the mainstream WWE fan who may not watch Independence has never had that opportunity to see the, probably never had that opportunity to see them in Ring of Honor or any Independence they may have worked in together, because both of them have worked Independence a lot also. Not just Ring of Honor, not just Joe's run in TNA, but they've worked everywhere.
Various places.
So there is a chance that their paths have crossed in the ring before, but I know that this is, you know, WWE made it clear when they brought Joe to Unstoppable and had him in the ring with Kevin Owens, this is the match we want. Well, Kevin Owens is spending a lot of time on the main roster now. It's got the program with John Cena. So maybe Joe does show up on the main roster.
Yeah, I mean, because let's see, the next person is going to get the NXT title. Would that be Sami Zayn? But where is he at?
Well, Sami Zayn's hurt, is he not? It's,
yeah, but he is. He did wrestle at Unstoppable.
I heard that he had to have surgery on his shoulder after that, and he's going to be out for a couple months.
Now, if Samoa Joe won the NXT title from Kevin Owens,
mm-hmm.
which caused Kevin Owens to officially leave NXT, then Joe could have the NXT title for a little bit.
And then he could lose it to Sami Zayn.
Mm-hmm. And then Samoa Joe comes to Raw and, you know, starts something up with Kevin Owens. Of course, we don't know where Kevin Owens will be. I mean, Kevin Owens will eventually win the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Somewhere
down
the line.
Yes, but I don't expect...
it'll be soon.
I don't expect to see it... I don't even expect to see it by the end of this year, honestly.
He's not in the Money in the Bank match.
I'm just a little disappointed to see that there's nobody from NXT in that match.
I wonder if they're fine. This is probably going to be one of their last chances to do this, is to put Dolph Ziggler with the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Well, as we know, Dolph's had the Money in the Bank briefcase before.
And that was amazing when he turned it in and won. I mean, I think everyone went crazy in their living room.
That is my favorite moments from WWE in the past 5 years when he cashed that in on Alberto Zero Charisma and won the WWE championship at the time.
If you're going to do something with him, do it now. And that's a good opportunity. Let him win the Money in the Bank championship, I mean the Money in the Bank briefcase, and then cash it in at some point during the year, or maybe wait until WrestleMania. Well,
clearly, the most obvious thing going on with Dolph Ziggler right now is even with Rusev being hurt, he's in a program with Rusev. Okay, they've got him with Lana. Sort of.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that the way that's going to end up is that Lana's going to end up back with Rusev and turn on Dolph Ziggler. Eventually, when Rusev comes back, I do think that Dolph Ziggler, because he does it so well, is once again being used to prop somebody else up, and he is going to be, basically, he's going to restore the luster off of Rusev's star that he lost by being buried by, as Kevin Owens called him, Monday Night Super Cena.
Everyone else calls him that, too.
I would love to see Dolph win the Money in the Bank briefcase. The direction I think they're going with that, interestingly enough, watch for Neville.
I wish he'd get rid of the cape.
I wish he'd get rid of the cape also. I'm glad that to this point, though, they are letting him use the Red Arrow.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the Red Arrow, folks,
it's amazing.
YouTube it. It's fantastic. And the way WWE is about high-risk moves, they're probably only going to let him use it for another month or so before they find something wrong with it and tell him he can't do it anymore. So go ahead and watch it now. The cape. You know, this is another thing, too, talking about Neville, by the way. I know that I mentioned that it was my belief that King Barrett was going to win the Intercontinental Championship at Elimination Chamber. And the reason I bring this up talking about Neville is because as soon as Wade Barrett was given the title as King, starting with a match with Neville on Raw, all Wade Barrett's done is lose.
Mm-hmm.
The King loses to everyone, have we noticed? Okay, the King loses to Neville. The King loses. Wasn't he the first man out in the Elimination Chamber?
Yeah, he was. He lost to R-Truth.
Yes. He got pinned by R-Truth first.
Which really surprised me.
Okay, so.
So they're doing nothing with him.
And then Monday night, he has a good match. He has actually a very good match with Roman Reigns, but he loses that too. I don't understand why you make Wade Barrett the King, which is so stale and overdone it hurts to watch, after he was Bad News Barrett, which was incredible and creative, and I know a lot of people really liked it. You make him the King, and then he's the stepping stone for everybody else. And even gets pinned by a man whose most notable contribution to the company in the last 7 years is an imaginary friend. Yes, that's a shout-out to little Jimmy.
But is that his fault?
No.
Creative.
No. That's not what I'm saying at all. The thing I don't understand is, what are they doing with Wade Barrett? Here's a talented guy in the ring. He can talk on the mic. He's a very good heel. Wade Barrett can easily make you hate him.
I feel like the same.
And they don't have enough guys like that. And
well, they do him with Cesaro. I mean, yeah, he's an tag team, but he can do a lot more.
I don't know. I was watching the Elimination Chamber, and I saw Cesaro in there. And for the first time that I can remember, honestly, I was a little disappointed in Cesaro's ring work Sunday night. You're watching, and those spots on the uppercuts, you know how he throws people up there and punches them like that? Those spots were really off. And I'm not sure if that's his fault or the people he's working with, but they looked bad and it made him look bad.
Is he so tired of it he's phoning it in?
I'm wondering, honestly. I'm wondering if he's getting tired of creative having nothing for him, of giving him a stupid entrance theme that sounds like an atomic bomb siren going off when that has nothing to do with his character. And I wonder, honestly, if Antonio Cesaro, Claudio Castagnoli, for those that don't know, is just fed up with WWE and he's ready to go back to ROH when his contract's up. You know, because that could be.
And I'm going to say he should if they're not going to do anything with him.
Yeah, it's a real waste.
He had an amazing match with John Cena on Raw. He's
such a talented individual. And Vince said,
I don't know what I'm going to do with him. I'm not going to do it. Stone Cold asked Vince on the podcast.
Stone Cold is really high on him, by the way. Stone Cold likes him a lot.
Punk was.
I think that's part of it. If you want to know the truth.
I'm surprised that Punk was mentioned on Heyman's podcast.
I think that that they're so upset with the way Punk left. And as we know,
he'll be back. Years from now, maybe. But he'll be back.
As we know, it's been mentioned. You know, they haven't tried to shy away from it. Punk and Triple H, really not fans of each other. Behind the scenes, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if they're taking everybody remotely involved with Punk, even, and, you know, they're holding them down a bit, honestly. I mean, they haven't done that with Lesnar, obviously. They haven't done that with Lesnar, but you're not going to hold Brock Lesnar down because you're hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm. He'll just leave and go to UFC. Exactly. Like that. By the way,
I take a look at a guy like Kofi Kingston, who, if you don't know, was often Punk's roommate on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And until very recently, funny they stories. Were doing nothing with Kofi Kingston. Dolph Ziggler is a close friend of Punk's, and you can see how they take care of Dolph Ziggler.
Paul Heyman's a close fan. Close friend.
A close friend of Punk's, and other than the podcast, he's done nothing since Lesnar left right after WrestleMania, which maybe was the plan, too.
What would he do, though?
That's true, and I think something he pointed out on the podcast, too, and it goes back to what I was saying about wrestling being authentic, is the fact that the only guys that he's really been super successful with in WWE recently are Brock Lesnar and CM Punk, both guys that he has strong relationships with outside of wrestling. And he even mentioned it. The reason that they go over so well is because people know they're friends. And so what they're seeing, maybe in this case even, it's not so much that it feels real, but it is real.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have that quality to wrestling, when it's real, it takes off.
Like Kevin Owens and John Cena.
Yep. I'm trying to think of another good example right now. Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, and Seth Rollins working together. They've been together since NXT. They worked together there. The three of them are friends outside the ring, well documented. And the stuff they do together, man, it's gold. Did you see when Dean Ambrose showed up at the end of Raw?
Mm-hmm.
And Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns together, they're clearing out the ring. Look at the expression on Roman Reigns' face of just pure
happiness.
Joy. And you can tell how much he enjoys being in the same ring as Dean Ambrose.
Yeah.
And how much he enjoys the two of them. There's no doubt he's not in there doing his job. He's having fun. He's entertaining people, and he's having fun.
Well, that's what you want to do at your job. Have
absolutely.
Fun.
You know, so when it's real, again, it takes off. And that's when it becomes something special in wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I mean, that's why, and I'm going to go back in time here a little bit. NWA days, before before it even became WCW, a lot of older fans will know this. Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes had this tremendous rivalry, often over the NWA World Championship, and their matches were like Paul Heyman was talking about with Brock Lesnar. Can't miss. Their matches were that good. And the thing was, is, man, they worked together so well. They had a chemistry. They liked what they were doing, and all that shined through in their work, and it was real, and it captivated people.
Yeah.
And that's why it worked. So one of the best matches I've ever seen, it was either 86 or 87 at the Great American Bash in Atlanta. It was a cage match between Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair, and it was magnificent. About a 40-minute match in a cage, which I'm a, you know, 9-10-year-old kid watching this, and to me, 40 minutes was forever. And I'm thinking, you know, Dusty Rhodes is a big dude. How can he be wrestling this long? But it was tremendous. And all of their matches were tremendous like that. And every great rivalry in wrestling, if you look at it, had that similar quality of being real. They always do. Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. When Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant wrestled together, it wasn't the best technical wrestling, but you had to watch it because they worked so well together. We've all seen WrestleMania 3.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's, for pure technical wrestling, it's about a star and a half, if that. But it's one of the greatest matches ever because they worked so well together in that ring and had so much charisma back and forth. You couldn't beat that. They told outstanding stories together. The story that night, you know, here's Hulk Hogan against this guy that hasn't lost a match in over 20 years. And, you know, how's he going to keep his title against that? And never mind the backdrop of the two of them being friends before, mm-hmm. you know, Andre turned heel. You know,
oh, yeah, he stabbed him with his necklace.
Yeah, Brother Love Show,
mm-hmm.
which I loved the Brother Love Show growing up. I used to imitate his voice. I'm not going to do that now because it doesn't sound as good as it used to. But Brother Love is a man by the name of Bruce Pritchard. In real life, who has actually worked behind the scenes for WWE now probably for over 2 decades. And that show was just magnificent, getting people over and getting rivalries over. And, yeah, I wasn't a big Hogan fan growing up. But, man, when he had his best friend, Andre the Giant, on there, and he stabbed him with his crucifix, I felt bad for Hulk Hogan.
Well, are you more of a heel guy?
I'm absolutely more of a heel guy, yes.
Me too. I mean, there's a few faces I like.
I can go through who I would... Okay, who would you say are your top 5 favorite wrestlers of all time?
You go ahead.
Well, for me, and this is going to surprise you because this is not what you think, because I do love Ric Flair.
Oh, we all know will know that in the future.
Ric Flair is not my favorite wrestler of all time.
Woo! Who is?
That would be HBK Shawn Michaels.
Mm.
I don't think that anybody has ever worked harder to entertain the fans inside of the ring and done it at such a high quality while working that hard too as Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels innovated so many things. Shawn Michaels is in the first ladder match in WWE. Shawn Michaels was in the first Hell in a Cell match in WWE. Shawn Michaels was in the first Elimination Chamber match in WWE. You know, there's a reason why, for these big moments, you keep going back to that person.
Yeah.
And, yeah, for me, he's the best I've ever seen. I prefer my Shawn Michaels, a little sarcastic, as the heel, mocking other people. I don't mind face Shawn Michaels, he's still good, but I prefer him heel. I loved the SummerSlam match and the build-up, particularly the build-up to it, the match he had with Hulk Hogan about 10 years ago at SummerSlam now, I think. And one of the funniest things I've ever seen in wrestling, and this probably made Vince McMahon really upset, I'm sure it upset Hulk Hogan, was Shawn Michaels selling the big boot in that match. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do, actually.
I don't think if you've seen that, you can ever forget it. Hogan hits the big boot, which, as we all know, is just a running front kick to the face. And Shawn Michaels flops around the ring for about 45 seconds afterwards.
Way oversells that.
Like I said, it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And that's just Shawn Michaels and his personality coming out. Because, and I felt he was absolutely right. You know, and no disrespect to Hogan, but Shawn Michaels, as a worker in the ring, is about 3 or 4 tiers ahead of him.
Right.
And that was Shawn Michaels saying, okay, you're 53 years old, brother. And you wrestle every now and then. I'm still wrestling full time. Why are you going over me?
Amazing.
You know, so yeah, I would have Shawn Michaels number one. My number two, yes, is Ric Flair.
Mr. Blue.
Ric Flair is the greatest testament to longevity ever in professional wrestling. 36-year career, taking bumps like that, and traveling all over the world to entertain people. I don't think that can be overlooked when you talk about the greatest wrestlers of all time. Plus, the tremendous charisma that Ric Flair had, not just while he was wrestling, but on the mic. I mean, everybody talks about The Rock, and Rock's interviews are top-notch. Yeah, not going to say anything bad about The Rock with a microphone in his hand, because that would just be silly. Ric Flair is the best talker ever in that industry. When Ric Flair came out, NWA World Championship over his shoulder, and he's talking about all of the things that he has and how that made him better than everybody else. Man, you just wanted to punch that guy in the face. And that's what you're supposed to get out of that. That's the way you're supposed to feel. Yes. Yeah, Ric Flair, absolutely. Number three, and this is a name that some people may not even remember all that well listening to this, but I was a huge fan of Ravishing Rick Rude.
You were?
Oh, yes. Ravishing Rick Rude, you want to talk about a guy that could make you hate him? Okay, Rick Rude, for people that don't know, was managed for the longest time by Bobby Heenan, and it was great to watch them work together, but Rick Rude being managed by Bobby Heenan was similar to Paul Heyman managing CM Punk, because while they worked great together, Rick Rude was strong enough on the mic that he didn't need Bobby Heenan to get him over.
Wow. Rick Rude on the mic, like, what things would he say to get you to
Rick bed? Rude had this shtick that he would do where he came out to the ring, and Rick Rude was a very well put together guy. Maybe the best looking lean muscular physique in the history of professional wrestling. He was a really good looking man. And he came out in this, because his name was Ravishing Rick Rude, he came out to the ring in this robe on the back that said simply Ravishing, and his entrance theme was just this, instrumental music. There was no lyrics to it or anything, but even the music sounded kind of arrogant, honestly. He would get into the ring with Bobby Heenan, and Heenan would kind of present him. And then Heenan would grab him a microphone, and Rick Rude would take the microphone, and he would do this thing. He'd go, "All right, now, what I would like to have," and say they were wrestling in, I don't know, Des Moines, Iowa.
All right.
That particular night. What I would like to have at this time is for all of you fat, lazy, out of shape Des Moines sweat hogs to sit back and shut your mouths while I show your wives what a real man has to offer. Now hit my music. And he would then commence, to slowly take off his robe, put both hands behind his head, and start swiveling his hips and everything. And, man, you wanted to choke the daylights out of Rick Rude.
But that was his job.
And then, beyond that, Rick Rude is one of the best technical wrestlers ever. Yeah, it wasn't just that he could talk. Great wrestler. Sold everything extremely well. Had, outstanding stamina. Could wrestle for a long time. Yeah, Rick Rude would be number three on my favorite wrestlers of all time. Number four is a guy that some people could argue is still going now. I think he's lost his mind a little bit if you read his Twitter feed sometimes, but he's responsible for, at least in part, what I think is professional wrestling's greatest gimmick ever. And the reason the gimmick was so good is because it's real. Oh, it's real. And of course I'm talking about Kurt Angle, the Olympic gold medalist. Why? Because he is an Olympic gold medalist. You can't deny him that. Kurt Angle, some of the best wrestling matches I've ever seen have involved Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle also has a tremendous gift for getting himself over on the mic as well. I was never a really big fan of Kurt Angle as a face. However, one of the most authentic feeling moments that I've seen in wrestling in a very long time. And that's because there was, a lot about it was actually real, during the invasion angle. And Kurt Angle is, as the face, taking on Stone Cold Steve Austin for the WWF Championship in his hometown of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And if you haven't seen that match and the reaction to that crowd of Kurt Angle winning the WWF title from Stone Cold Steve Austin. And that is what every professional... That reaction right there that night is what every professional wrestler is shooting for when they go into the business. That's the reaction you want from the crowd.
Nope.
You want to inspire them to feel that excited. And that was just a tremendous moment.
Goldberg versus Hogan. Remember that huge crowd reaction in Atlanta?
Especially
that's what you want.
Definitely. And not even so much Goldberg winning. Yeah, that was great. But man, when Goldberg lifts him up for that jackhammer and is holding him there, and you see the streamers flying through the air while people are screaming, and I'm thinking, man,
NWO's
the roof
about to run
really
out.
Is going to come off that place. It's that loud. Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah. People are probably afraid, though, that he wasn't going to win because of the New World Order or some kind of crap. And then when he actually won.
I don't know. Watching it that night, and how they kept... You remember, it was a different kind of broadcast that night. Because they had Scott Hall come out first, and they told Goldberg that he had to go through... Well, Hogan said, "You have to go through my black and white, brother." And, you know, and it was Scott Hall coming back, and of course, Goldberg made quick work of Scott Hall, because you knew that they were going to have the Goldberg-Hogan match.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Goldberg was good in the ring. He wasn't the best with stamina because he was a bigger guy. So the last thing you needed him to do was go out and get blown up against Scott Hall and then not have much left for the match with Hogan, because you knew what you wanted to do with that, and you needed Goldberg to be himself and have that intensity. So you couldn't have him get tired against Scott Hall, which is why that match lasted maybe 4 minutes.
Why not build that up to be a pay-per-view? Why not make money off of that? Everyone would have bought that pay-per-view.
I don't know. You have to ask Eric Bischoff. I don't know what the thinking was. I remember feeling the same way you did. You know, why are they having Goldberg win the title on Nitro and then defend it at the end of the week at Bash at the Beach against Kurt Hennig? And mind you, Kurt Hennig, great wrestler. Well, I loved Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect. I feel bad for his Charisma Challenge son, but that's another story entirely. Man, you know, why you don't have, you know, like you said, why don't you make that money on that? Why don't you save that match for the pay-per-view, Hogan defending against, and maybe it was just the idea, you know, Hogan has told this story, actually. I've heard it in on different shoot interviews on YouTube, where Hogan tells the story that he's in a car with Bischoff early that afternoon, and he's thinking about everything, and he sees where Goldberg's headed. And he's thinking, we're in Atlanta, Georgia. And this is what Hogan says, and mind you, it's been, you know, known for years that Hogan had creative control over his character. So this might very well be true.
Mm-hmm.
He says he looked at Eric Bischoff and said, "Hey, let's put him over tonight in his hometown.
Hmm.
Yeah, it'll be good for WCW. It'll be good for Nitro. Let's, you know, and he's earned it. Let's do it."
Question about creative control.
Sure.
Hogan, if Bischoff wanted Hogan to lose, Hogan had to tell Bischoff that he wanted to lose. Like,
no, what it was is if Bischoff wanted Hogan to lose, Hogan had the right to tell him, "No, I want to go this direction."
But he didn't have the official. Like, could Bischoff say you're losing no matter what? Is like if he had the title. And Bischoff wanted the title off.
I don't know the particulars.
I was always wondered that.
What it came down to is at least at times Hogan could call his shots. Whether or not that was that way all the time, I don't know. But at least at times, Hulk Hogan could call his shots. Which, by the way, if you ask me, is a big mistake.
They do it now, though, don't they? Don't Vince let people have creative control now?
Nobody has creative control in WWE, and they never have.
I wonder, though, I remember him saying, Vince has said that something about, it's something that I wouldn't do is creative control. But then I thought I heard him say on one of his things, but that's something we do now for certain people. I don't know.
What he does now for certain people as far as creative is certain people are allowed to write their own promos. Hmm. Like every word you come out of you hear come out of Bray Wyatt's mouth on Raw.
That's not written by somebody.
He wrote that.
Well, I know Vince is the final say on everything.
Yeah. Well, even the guys that write their own stuff, they have to run it by Vince. The one exception to that,
Cena.
I have heard that Cena just goes out and ablibs. Mm. And Cena's not good because Cena doesn't even have a character anymore.
He's the company spokesman.
He just goes out to the ring and talks about how much he loves wrestling and how much he loves working with kids and how much he loves that company and how much, you know, it's his life. And he doesn't have to write it beforehand because he's just telling you who he is.
So you think Cena will always be with the WWE even when he's 60? You think he'll be a lifer?
Well, obviously, he's not going to be in the ring that long. At least we hope not.
He can do Ric Flair.
As much as I love Ric Flair, I don't know that we ever want to see anybody to that extent again. Just because, you know...
Okay, well, Cena in the office.
Guys take so many more chances now. I don't know.
Or authority role or something.
I don't know if Cena's a guy that wants an office role.
But he would never leave the WWE. You never see Cena go in a Ring of Honor.
No, no. Cena will never work for another company. Let's understand that. Cena will not work for another company. I don't know if after his time in the ring is up...
It's a pun. His time is up.
Yeah. I didn't mean it that way, but good catch. I don't know that John Cena wants to continue in any other capacity. Maybe he does. He certainly, if you believe everything that's said on Total Divas, doesn't have much interest in having children. So, you know, there's that. Maybe he wants to be involved with the industry together because, you know, for the rest of his life, because, you know, having a family is a wonderful thing, but obviously there's certain considerations then when you do.
Is it a hard transition for a wrestler to go from wrestling full time to not doing it at all? Do you get the feel of the crowd, you know, and you miss that, and you miss being a wrestler and being involved and, you know, everything that comes with it when you no longer are?
I don't know if I'm really qualified to say so. I mean, I wrestled for 7 months in independence, for those that don't know, and it was a very small independent. I never wrestled probably in front of more than 105 people. It was fun to feed off of that energy. I can't imagine what it's like to be in 20,000 seat arenas and have them full and have that kind of energy. And I can see where that would be a little bit like a drug, yeah. And it would be addictive, and it would be hard to break that addiction when your time in the ring was over with. But that's a question that's, you know, better for some of these guys that have been doing it for 10, 15 years, I would think.
Like Ric Flair, he's still Ric Flair when he's at home. And he's going around spending money and you know, driving fancy limousines. And, you know, I mean, you've seen him. Wife Swap. Have anybody seen Wife Swap? Where?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's Ric Flair outside of the ring and outside of the ring. So I wonder, does a lot of the wrestlers take the personality with them too? Like, hey, I am this wrestler, and I came from this, and this is who I am, and I'm going to stay this person because this is the person I've been for so long.
Barry Windham, who, for those who don't know, is actually a really close friend of Ric Flair's, was in what I think is the best reincarnation of the Four Horsemen, which was Ric Flair, Barry Windham, Tully Blanchard, and Arn Anderson. But Barry Windham tells this story, and I've heard it a few times, of where they've flown to Tokyo for a show for WCW, and Ric Flair at this point is wrestling probably part-time. Yeah, because he's having his issues with management and everything else. You know, this was early, mid-90s, that period. And Barry Windham tells this story where they've landed in Tokyo and they're all getting off the plane and they're really calm and everything. You know, because they're just guys that have shown up in Tokyo to do their job. And there's really not that many people there at this point because they've arrived at night. And everybody else has gotten off the plane, and all of a sudden, you have Ric Flair getting off this plane, and while everybody else is out of character, here's Ric Flair with nobody around but the other wrestlers getting off the plane, and woo! In the middle of the night. And people are just looking at him like, Ric, they're not here. Tone it down.
Yeah, I mean,
he's and he doesn't just get off the plane. He's strutting off the plane.
But he's Ric Flair 24/7.
Oh, yeah. Similar to John Cena, Ric Flair is Ric Flair, only Ric Flair is nuts.
So, what's Ric Flair turned up full volume? I don't even know if we can say what Ric Flair is turned up full volume.
The idea of Ric Flair turned up full volume really, really scares me. Because what I envision is Ric Flair cutting a promo in the ring and getting so excited, his head actually explodes.
I used to always think that watching him in WCW, it's this one big vein come up and it's like, Ric, don't get too excited, man. You
were always waiting for Ric to stroke out.
It worried me when Ric Flair would get, you know, really into his promos.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that one vein would just start busting. I was like, oh, man. Anyway.
And as we've seen not too long ago, you know, Ric Flair can still do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, leading up to WrestleMania this year, you had the Triple H Sting match, and you had Ric Flair come out and cut a promo with Triple H talking about Sting and how he needed to beware of Sting. And I'll be... It's not one of the best promos I've seen on Raw this year. And you were legitimately scared Ric Flair might have a stroke. You know?
So, I mean, still proves he's a great talker.
Yeah!
And he's very passionate. He gets behind what he's saying.
Oh!
And that makes it authentic in that...
Flair loves that business. Let's get it straight. I can sit here and say that.
And you can tell. Ric Flair is crazy. He's still here.
You know, and there might actually legitimately be a couple screws loose now. You know, that's what a lifetime of drinking and getting hit in the head does to you.
I mean, he's still part of the business.
Ric Flair loves that industry, and he loves entertaining fans. You wouldn't do it at over 60 years old if you didn't love it.
Right.
And
it's not about the money.
If his body was still able, Ric Flair would still wrestle 320 nights a year and try to go 60 minutes every night. I don't doubt that.
You'd probably think, you know, it had to be a hard transition for him.
Definitely. Definitely. Ric Flair would still like to be out there. That's why even though they had the big retirement ceremony for him and everything else in WWE, the Raw, after he actually retired at WrestleMania 24.
Oh.
And, you know, Ric Flair's the only active wrestler that's ever gone in the WWE Hall of Fame. They did that for him as well. And his contract was up 2 months later, and he went and he started performing again in TNA.
Well,
and if anybody else had done that, Vince McMahon would have been livid. Livid. Ric Flair did it, and Vince just understood he has to get it out of his system.
Well, you know, Ric Flair has his daughter, Charlotte, coming through the ranks. So how do you think that, I mean, that's another way to relive.
I don't want to say that Ric Flair is living vicariously through his daughter.
Well, I just mean it's a way for him to be there.
It is definitely a way for him to be there.
And it's a way to watch her grow in her career. Because who knows where Charlotte's
going to
be.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
well, she's going to the main roster. Yeah. We know that.
I mean, but who knows, you know, where she's going from here as far as, like, the people that she's going to be involved with, wrestling, the storylines, things like that. Will she become a Divas champion? Yeah, I'm sure she will be eventually. But I want to see Ric Flair and Charlotte in the ring talking or doing something.
Oh, you may get that someday.
What if you got Natalya and Bret Hart and Ric Flair and
mixed
Charlotte?
Tag team match.
Not really. Well, that would be funny. But like,
yeah, I think for one match you could actually do that.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Natalya versus, actually, that's how she debuted on Raw.
Yes, Bret and Natalya against Charlotte and Ric Flair. That would...
There we go. Yeah. Charlotte, North Carolina, book it.
Yep. Well, you asked me my top five.
Yeah, I think you got to four.
I got to four with Kurt Angle.
Let's hear your fifth one.
Chris Jericho.
Well,
Chris Jericho is everything I wanted to be as a professional wrestler, because
you want to be the rock and roll Ayatollah.
He's a professional wrestler and a rock star all in one, and I think that Chris Jericho is the embodiment of charisma. And the reason I say something like that is, think about when Chris Jericho came back, and he came back and he had the program with CM Punk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how did that start? How did that comeback start? Do you remember?
I know that Chris Jericho comes back. The way he comes back is he comes back with like a crazy promotional video that's saying he's coming soon. You know, like with the, you remember the kid and the school and the little girl and all that stuff. You didn't know what that was about. The end of the world is coming as you know it, stuff like that.
A lot of people speculated that that was Sting. A lot of people speculated that was The Undertaker.
Did you hear about that? Sting was almost going to sign for WrestleMania 19 to go against Austin and deal fell through.
Yep.
But anyways, about Chris Jericho, I mean, he has all these weird returns, you know.
Well, the videos, yeah.
Yeah,
but do you remember how he actually returned?
All I know is that the CM Punk thing was about the drinking.
Yes, but how he actually returned for that run.
Is that the one where
he
didn't
call?
He
comes back. And he's, you know, you get this view of him, and you know it's him, because he's standing there, and they got the shot of him from behind, with the arms shaking.
Oh, yeah, you always know that's him.
And he's got that sparkling jacket that we had never seen before. And, yeah, he looks every bit the rock star. And he's coming down to the ring, and he's got the huge smile on his face. And he's shaking hands with all the fans, and they're so excited to see him. And he goes over and he gets that microphone from the side of the ring, steps into the ring, and doesn't say a word. How dare you? How dare you do that? We've been waiting for you to come back. We've wanted it. We've asked for it. You've been promoting it on your Twitter account again. Which show am I going to go back to? TNA or Raw?
Was he in TNA? Oh, he done that little music.
Just coming back to wrestling.
I remember he did do the music.
Yeah. You know, where am I going to go? TNA or WWE? And everybody's telling him, we want to see you in WWE. Go back to WWE. And he comes back, and everybody wants to hear what he has to say. Can't wait to hear it. You know, what's he going to do? Is he going to go after Edge? Is he going to go after Punk? We don't know. He's not going to speak. He took it from us. But man, so much electricity without even saying a word. That's charisma. That's how you do it.
So listen to that, Curtis Axel.
Sorry, on that note, we need to go.
Well, I was like, if Kurt Axel came to the ring and didn't say anything, would they just applaud? I don't know. Oh, anyway, it depends. Well, we want to thank you all for listening to this podcast for June the 3rd here. I'm Brandon, and that was...
Charles.
And if you have any questions for us that you want to have us answer, I didn't get any last time. No one's emailed me. But if you want to email me, or go to BrandonTypesHere.com and click contact and fill out that form, or go to Twitter at BrandonTypesHere.
We're not done yet. Charles has one more thing to talk about from Raw.
A Divas Championship match Monday night.
Oh, Paige.
Between Paige and Nikki Bella.
We had Twin Magic brought back.
I'm going to get to that. I want to say first, Nikki Bella has improved in the ring to the point that I can now watch her wrestle a match without it being painful.
Right.
And a couple of years ago, I didn't think I'd ever say that. Mm-mm. Because she was terrible.
Right. I agree, actually. You know, I think Abella actually can wrestle.
However, and I can't stress this enough, they don't look alike anymore.
I don't know.
Okay?
Yeah.
You can't do the twin magic thing when they don't look alike. You can pretend that Mike Chioda's dumb. You can't pretend he's outright blind. We know he can see. Okay? I don't care that she had her head down. No, it just doesn't work. That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And honestly, it was an ending that spoiled a very good match.
That's basically saying Paige can go over on Nikki.
Yes. And I know that I've made a big deal, you know, with regards to the New Day about heels cheating and everything else. But there's thousands of different ways to cheat in a wrestling match. You didn't have to do something that makes Mike Chioda look like the dumbest man on the planet.
Maybe Vincent Ribbing Mike Chioda.
She has dark hair. She has blonde hair.
Their faces look different to me.
Unbelievable.
One says NB, the other one says BB on their outfit.
I'm watching this. I watch Raw on my computer. Because the rest of my family doesn't appreciate professional wrestling the way I do, unfortunately. And I'm watching this, and my jaw is just hanging open. I couldn't believe they did it. But I hope I never see it again unless they have plastic surgery so they once again look identical. But I don't know how that would work for Daniel Bryan and John Cena, but... But yeah, I'm sorry, I couldn't let this podcast go by without commenting on that. Because it really is one of the most ridiculous things I've seen in a very long time.
Alright, you got that out of your system. So.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to this podcast for June the 3rd, BrandonTypesHere.com.
And by the way, just one more thing, when you hopefully write to us and tell us what you think of the show, also tell us what you think of the debut of Ring of Honor on Destination America tonight.
That's the night I didn't even think about that. All right. Well, thanks for watching this. Well, not watching us, but listening to this podcast. Have a good night, and we will see you next. You will hear us next week if you listen.
All right, guys, that was our show. Remember, get in contact with me, Brandon, by going to brandontypeshere.com/contact. Fill out the form and ask us some questions concerning wrestling that we'll answer on our next podcast. Or if you have a Twitter, go on twitter.com and search for @BRANDN Types Here and ask us questions that way. Again, thanks for listening to our weekly podcast.